Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala here with you. 720 WGN. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio here in the Tribune Tower on the Magnificent Mile in a very chilly and cold Chicago. Joining us on the phone right now is Norman Perlstein. He wrote a column that's going to be in the latest Time magazine that should be on newsstands now. The headline is In Praise of Leaks. And Norman, when I first emailed you earlier this week to get you on, there were a lot fewer leaks than there have been in the last day or two. Notably, there was an immigration meeting with Republicans and Democrats where somebody leaked out that the president referred to certain African countries as shithole countries. And I went ahead and said that on the air right now. I didn't see what the ruling was here at the station, whether we say that or not. So I'm going to hope because it's 4 a.m, I'm okay with the FCC on that. And because I'm allegedly quoting our president. And then also the story that the Wall Street Journal had out yesterday that an adult movie star was paid $130,000 by one of President Trump's attorneys to keep quiet over an alleged affair or sexual liaison that happened. And so that was leaked to the Wall Street Journal somehow, or something happened there. And so it's just quite an interesting time, Norman. Thank you so much for jumping on the phone with us.
My pleasure. It's great to be with you.
The column that you wrote is quite comprehensive, and it brings up a name that I hadn't heard in so long, Valerie Plame, and remember the whole issue that you guys went through with the reporting after her husband Joseph Wilson had written a story for Time magazine, correct?
The story actually ran in the New York Times.
In the New York Times.
Right. But we were dealing with Pat Fitzgerald, who was then the U.S. attorney in Chicago.
Yeah. And who had great credibility, but they were going after the source of this leak, and you guys fought against that, and you lost your battles, and I can't remember, did a Time reporter go to jail instead of giving up the source?
No, it was a New York Times reporter named Judith Miller who went
to jail. That's right.
She was there for about 13 weeks or so. It was a complicated case, and frankly, many of us in the press, I don't think, understood the ground rules about grand juries and testifying, and it made us, I think, have to rethink the whole issue of when are we going to treat a source as confidential whom we're willing to engage in civil disobedience with, if you will, to protect.
You know, and what's interesting, so we're talking now about, because President Trump does not hide his disdain for the media that he does not like. And he keeps talking about how we're going to change the libel laws. And he's very upset about what he calls fake news and the fake media. And so there's a lot of different fronts where he's on the attack. But as you mentioned in your piece in Time, the President Obama had, while certainly not publicly attacking the press and publicly praising the press, he was very upset about leaks as well and went hard after the leakers, if not after the press, right?
Right, which seems appropriate to me. I think that we want it both ways. I think as Americans, we want to be accepting of the idea that government has secrets. At the same time, if they are going to leak and if there are reasons that people want to leak, then you're going to find a very receptive press. The whole idea of the First Amendment was that Congress could not control the press because the founders believed that the press had a healthy role to play in keeping government honest. And one function of that is that occasionally you're going to get leaks that are appropriate to run.
Well, and everybody liked
this administration, it's more than occasional because there's just so much stuff that people sitting in a room can't believe.
What would you attribute all the leaks coming from? Because, you know, we know some of them are Steve Bannon, and it's people on President Trump's inner circle sometimes. You could understand if there's leftovers from another administration, people that are very against, because you have to fill the government with so many workers. So there's going to be a lot of people there that maybe aren't all in on whatever's going on. So maybe there's leaks from that. But it seems like an amazing number of leaks, I would imagine more than most presidents, coming from within the confines of the West Wing. Are you surprised by how much is coming out from the Trump administration?
I think that you're right. Leaks. It's hard. You can try to play the game of who leaked and who didn't, and so forth. And it's awfully hard to always figure that out unless you're the reporter who was the recipient of the information. Certainly, the Michael Wolff book, I think, validates a notion that a lot of journalists covering this White House have believed to be true, which is that it's a very fractured White House staff, and that if you've got two or three agendas going on there and you see something happening that's not consistent with yours, chances are you're going to want to talk about it.
Do you think that, so would you say, is it fair to say that maybe President Trump has kind of set himself up for this because he's not running a traditional White House where, you know, by being a little more freewheeling with everything, you're going to set up these sort of divisive camps because it's not, hey, we're doing it this way, everybody get on the same page, let's work together. He is sort of, it sounded like, especially early on, when so many people had access to him and things like that, it's almost like he fostered this competition within the White House.
Well, certainly that was true, I think, before General Kelly came in as chief of staff. He has worked hard to, as you say, control the flow of information into the president. We also have a situation where, if you will, the president himself is a pretty aggressive leaker. What's different is that as chief of the country, he anything he leaks is almost by definition declassified.
Right. Do you think that there, because we've heard stories about before the election how he used to call and pretend to be somebody else working for Donald Trump and
right.
tell stories.
Right, press people. And even when the WikiLeaks information about the Clinton campaign were emerging, he was on air saying, I love leaks.
Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't love them as much now, that's for sure. And he's been very vocal about that.
Absolutely not. And yet, in a way, the kind of culture that he has fostered, including one where anything that he doesn't like is defined as fake news, is one where you are going to encourage people to leak information. And you're also encouraging a very aggressive press to go after information.
So in defense of leaks, I mean, with the way things are leaking in this White House right now, do you think it's good for the press? Do you think it puts the press more in jeopardy? Because the more things leak out, while it's good that we're getting the story and maybe helping journalists find where the stories are, it's also putting the president more and more on the attack against journalists. And journalists are under more threat here in America than they've probably been in decades, right?
Yes. Look, leaks are one factor, but I think that the president's attack on the media is really just part of a strategy that has been his for a very long time. If the best way to understand Donald Trump really is to go read The Art of the Deal, and while his co-writer, Tony Schwartz, would suggest that Trump wasn't very involved in the writing, it certainly is his voice and his thinking. And if you know, just in the very beginning of it, he talks about how you always attack and that you always engage in what he calls truthful hyperbole, and which I think anyone else would call lying. And he's been totally consistent about this for a very long time.
Well, and I wonder if there is a definition of truthful hyperbole that could be different than lying.
Hyperbole itself.
Because we know he blows things up, right?
I mean, it is not true.
Well, I thought hyperbole is more just conflating things to be bigger and better than they are, right? His crowd at the inauguration. While some could say that was a lie, others would say, well, from his vantage point, it looked like millions and millions of people, and that's what he was saying.
It was a lie. I don't think there's much doubt about that. But his feeling is that if you're on the attack, and if you're saying these things, then people are going to be distracted from what is actually true.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like, and it's so Norman, I've been debating this for, well, probably with Roger here in the newsroom since President Trump was halfway through the campaign trail, whether or not he knows what he's doing and he's purposely doing these crazy things just to get us a little distracted from things like with North Korea. Is he just crazy, or is he crazy like a fox? Because he knows that acting crazy sometimes is an advantage. It throws the defense off and you're not sure what's going on. What's your take on him, you know, some of these things he does that seem so outlandish?
Well, I think it's a bit of both, that strategically, he did, there is a part of him, and there's a part of frankly every president that says if people don't know exactly what my thinking is, I can keep people on the defensive. Nixon especially believed that, and that's not necessarily new. I think that President Trump's instinct, whenever confronted, is I will say what I think is going to be best for me at the moment, and truth is not going to be an issue. And so, 11 women will come forward, identify themselves, and give examples of his groping, of his sexual harassment, and so forth. And he says, well, it's in my best interest to say that never happened and that it's fake news. In other cases, I think it's just instinct where he, whatever is on his, there's not much of a filter between his brain and his tongue.
Roger Badish up in the newsroom again. Isn't it also true that in politics, and it doesn't happen all the time, but in politics, many politicians float balloons to get a sense of what the public is thinking, or what the media is covering. And so they may say something or leak something from their office and see how it plays, and then come back later and say, well, that's not what we're doing, or we're going to go in a different direction, or I don't know where you got that. But it's a lot of these leaks purposely were put out by the politician's office.
I think that's absolutely right. And, without getting too much into the weeds, many of us tried to distinguish between a plant and a leak. And, John Kennedy and others have often said that the ship of state is the only ship that leaks from the top.
Norman, you have known President Trump for a long time, dating back to your time with the Wall Street Journal and things like that. You and I were emailing earlier today, and you said you've known him for about 30 years now, I imagine, just from reporting and things like that. What's your take on him overall? How do you look at him as a man outside of the presidency?
Well, I don't want to overstate the relationship. I knew him as the top editor at the Wall Street Journal, who was supervising coverage of all business. And in those days, he was getting into casinos. But he was always a presence in New York media. He was very aggressive in his dealings with the press and very manipulative. So he was available. If you wanted him, you'd call him up and you could get him on the phone. We did occasionally see each other socially. I had a prior marriage with a fairly large wedding that he attended. I've never attended any of his. But my take is that he is he's a self-promoter in the most truthful sense of that word, and that he always thought of the media as something that was going to be very important to him. And that's where the inconsistency is, that he keeps saying fake news, and yet he gives interviews to the Wall Street Journal. He gives interviews to the New York Times. He gives interviews to the Washington Post. He sends his White House people to CNN and so forth. So, and if you go into his office, you will see framed photos of every cover that he's ever been on.
And ones he hasn't been on, right? I mean, that was a big story earlier this year, too.
Yes. Well, he takes Time magazine very seriously, I'm happy to say.
He does, but at Mar-a-Lago, they reported earlier this year there were Time magazine covers that were, like, made up, that weren't an actual cover that he was on.
But that's consistent with everything else we're seeing.
Yeah, I believe it. Let me ask you about the report yesterday in the Wall Street Journal that a Trump lawyer had paid off an adult film star to stay quiet about a relationship with Donald Trump, allegedly $130,000. I want to ask you, because there is this bias that President Trump likes to promote in the media, but the Wall Street Journal is not one of his targets, and it's generally thought to be supportive of of certainly at least Republican politicians. Whether or not that's true or just a perceived bias, it's certainly a pro-business paper,
it
right?
It is. Even under News Corp, it was a different owner from when Dow Jones and Company owned it in the years I was there. There's always been a bit of a split between the editorial page, which is clear and consistent in its advocacy of goals that are largely Republican, although they will criticize the Republicans on occasion. And the newsroom has had a strong desire to play it straight. And so it's hard to find that bias in the news coverage. It's really the editorials, I think, that have made people think that the publication was much more aligned with Trump than you might find if you read it all the time.
Okay. So with the publication of this today, and we don't know, you know, of course there's denials from his side, and we'll see what happens. We'll see what else comes out from this. But it's a real risk for the Journal to run with something like that. And in today's day and age, especially at a place like the Journal, I would imagine they're taking great pains to make sure this isn't going to come back and bite them, that they're going to be able to defend the reporting and be checking things like crazy. What's your concern level about journalism today? Because it's such a competitive business. You know, the companies are struggling as they've never had before. Newspapers are struggling in general. And while the New York Times has sounds like really increased readership and its digital sales and everything, and probably have to thank President Trump for that somewhat, overall, media companies, especially in the old media, struggle mightily. And they're under attack now.
Supported media is under extraordinary pressure. But I think, look, this was a story that the Journal must have worked very hard on. The New York Times, in its follow-up to it, had some interesting background about the conversations that were going on between the woman the Journal was talking about and Slate and ABC and Jacob Weisberg, who is a highly respected journalist who was running Slate, goes into extensive detail about all of his discussions with her that led him to believe that the story was true.
Well, it's and so what's your overall though feeling on journalism today and the state that it finds itself in? Because
I think journalism is under attack. I think part of it is no, you don't need a license to be a journalist. That's the whole idea. And when the founders made the First Amendment, what they did, it wasn't to protect big media companies. It was to protect people who were more of the equivalent of the blogger in pajamas. And so today we have had this proliferation of content coming from all over the place and trying to understand what is true and what is not is difficult because it is so easy to find content that confirms our own biases. And in that kind of world, it is not surprising that you have people yelling fake news, fake news. The other issue is anonymity. Nobody likes anonymous sources. Reporters don't like it. Readers and viewers don't like it. And yet, it is really a part of our fabric, part of our culture, and that has exploded exponentially with the digital media that has developed since 1994.
And the thing about that is, right, those anonymous sources are only as good as our trust in who is reporting them. So these continued attacks on the media and then devaluing our trust in that media helps devalue those stories.
Sure. And because, you know, if all you're doing is reading Breitbart and listening to other radio voices who are far more confrontational and reflective of their own beliefs and aspirations, then you're going to reject anything that is not nailed down. And that's where anonymity really confuses a lot of people, even though it leads to information flowing to the media that otherwise would not.
And I think, Norman, I'll even go a step further than that. And it's not just you only look at Breitbart, you only look at Fox News, you only look at MSNBC or Think Progress or whatever, but also just, you know, the way we consume media now, most of us not getting a newspaper at home anymore that we flip through, that's just an old guard, you know, maybe biased, maybe not, but, you know, you're generally getting the straight news. You know, if I go on yahoo.com and I'm just scrolling through the news feed, they are sending me stories they think I'll click on based on my prior usage. And I see it all the time because I own Apple stock and I click on those, I get more Apple. I'm a Star Wars fan. I get tons of Star Wars things. So if I like or don't like President Trump or certain stories I click on, they're aggregating that. And so even in our most general sense, we're being fed whatever they think we want now. And that is, I really am concerned about the death of us being more more well-read in such a minor way of just getting the news and making our own decisions. They're helping us just feed what we already think we are.
Well, as you saw yesterday, Facebook revised those algorithms to increase emphasis on information that you get from your friends as opposed to information you get from news sources or traditional media.
Well, and paid content and things like that, and people who are out there really trying to get you. And I don't know how much that's going to help, because if that's just Johnny was at gymnastics tonight, look how great he did, and we cheer, that's great. But if we're choosing our friends based on their beliefs and they're yelling about this or that or saying Oprah for president, and that's why we're reading them, then it's still somewhat the same thing, right? I mean, I think that's that hopefully will help. It'd be very interesting to see how that goes with Facebook and what difference they think that makes down the road. Norman Perlstein wrote In Praise of Leaks. It's in this week's Time magazine. You can also find it at time.com. Norman, I really appreciate you jumping on the phone. I hope we can talk again.
Anytime, Matt. I'm a great admirer of your show, and I appreciate the opportunity.